Welcome to the 52nd Australian Open.
Hello, and welcome to a new season of The AO Show, the official podcast of Australian Open 2021. I'm John Hoovenaars, steering you through the next month of the Australian Summer of Tennis and bringing you the latest news and views from the court and beyond. We'll be hearing from players, commentators, journalists and officials capturing the first slam of the year from every angle. Today on the show, we speak to tournament director Craig Tiley about the latest on the Australian Open preparations.
I think the Australian public should know that the majority of the players are extremely positive, excited and feel very welcome.
We catch up with former top 40 pro Nicole Pratt for a women's preview.
I'd say they're all jumping out of their skin and I think they're going to be super appreciative of the opportunity that Tennis Australia is providing.
And we check in with commentator Nick McCarville for his men's championship predictions.
If that's our final, pass me a couple buckets of popcorn because I'm in for it.
That's all coming up on The AO Show. It's just 19 days till the Australian Open begins. The players are partway through their 14-day hotel quarantine in Melbourne and Adelaide, preparing as best they can for the upcoming summer series. Joining me to discuss the latest is Australian Open Tournament Director Craig Tiley. Craig, thanks for your time and congratulations on your preparations to date. How is the event shaping up less than 3 weeks out?
Thanks, John. It's good to have an opportunity to have a chat. The event itself is shaping up brilliantly. Obviously, the operational team that's responsible for the delivery of that are well on schedule. With the preparation of the site's going to look magnificent again. I think I'm really excited to showcase to the Melbournean public and Victorian and Australian public is how great this event is going to once again be. We're going to have obviously 3 weeks of great tennis, the lead-in events, then followed by the Australian Open starting on February the 8th. So that's going to be great. And then, of course, from the players' perspective, we've had a really tough start because you're bringing in over 1,000 people into a 14-day quarantine period, and it's really hard to adapt to. I think we've found those struggles with some of the comments the players have made, but things seem to have settled down a little bit here on the sixth day, and I think they'll settle down even further, but it has not been easy. It's a mammoth logistical task.
There's been a lot reported and spoken about since the players began arriving. What would you like fans to know?
Well, I think for fans to know is that, some of the players have been making comments about being locked up in a room and that, and we get it. It's difficult. If you come from a different culture, a different part of the world, we haven't had to do that. This is new. We're used to it because it's become part of our operational environment now. But the vast majority have been really good, have been fantastic, and completely accepting of it and being able to move on. The small minority have been very vocal about very tough conditions. But everyone coming to Australia has to quarantine for 14 days regardless. And in some cases, if you consider a close contact on a plane or in a cohort, then you are, you have to quarantine for 14 days. So that is tough. So I think the Australian public should know that the majority of the players are extremely positive, excited and feel very welcomed. And not to let the voice of the minority of the few cloud that, but then also to realize that this is a mammoth logistical task. We've made some mistakes along the way because of just logistics. You can't help the bus driver showing up at the wrong venue or getting a late start from the hotel when you go to your training, whatever it may be. I think we're going to, if we can get this done and get it done right and have a great event, I think we'll certainly be a fantastic example for other major events, international major events to be run during COVID, including the Olympic Games coming up. And while the scale of Olympic Games will be a bit bigger, all the principles are going to be very much the same. So I think there'll be some learnings that they'd want to take from this, because the very difficult thing to do is to keep the community safe. And avoid a spread of the virus within the cohort, within the playing group, and we have 1,000 athletes in that, or 1,000 people in that. So I think that's been a massive challenge for us, which we're still in the middle of going through. It's a lot of sleepless nights, but we'll get there in the end.
There's a bit of confusion around case numbers, with reports of another two players testing positive and in hard lockdown. Could you clarify these numbers for us?
Yeah, the confusion comes because if you get a positive case, you get listed as a positive case, and then they'll do a review of your case, and you may be someone that is virally shedding, and as well as being a recovered case, and therefore you're not infectious. We've only had a total of six cases with the 1,200 people we've had come into Melbourne. We've only had six total cases, and those six are all in the quarantine in the Medi Hotel, the health hotel, where they're monitored, and there they stay for 14 days, and then come out. I mean, the whole idea about the 14 days is there's zero risk of the virus spreading after 14 days, but there is still a very small risk, I believe, between 3% and 5%. I've been told by the chief medical team. The last 4 days of those 14 days. So there's still a risk there. So we need to, obviously need to do our part in ensuring that the community is safe. But that's the difficulty of this, is that balance.
What's the outlook for the next couple of weeks before the tennis starts on January 31?
Well, next week is to get through the quarantine period for the players to come out and help them prepare as best as we possibly can, as they can, for the events. We've got a 9-day buffer between quarantining and the start of the Australian Open, but there's events in there, so we've got to work through how those players can best prepare that are in a tough situation. It's just unfortunate that they were on a flight that the health officer deemed as close contacts, and I think that's ultimately, I know there's been a lot of conjecture around did the players know or not know there'd be a close contact on a flight, but you know, at the end of the day, we did say to both the councils of the AHP and the WTA that we cannot guarantee that everyone on the flight will be a close contact, and it'll ultimately be a decision of the health officer. But that's why we invested in 17 flights, only 25% full, is to ensure that no players became infected. And so far, that is the case, and that's positive. And also to ensure that, and hopefully give us then an opportunity for the health officer to review the flight and look at the distancing on the flight and not put everyone into a hard lockdown. So those were the reasons why we did that. But we do have 72 players in the hard lockdown, which is not ideal for them, not for anyone. And so we've got to make the best we can possibly can of a situation that's not that good.
And finally, there have been some questions over the timing of the event. Why is it important that the Australian Open goes ahead in Melbourne at this time?
I've been asked that question a lot, particularly because you're seeing a lot of media this morning and even getting some commentary on email. And I think it's a great question. Everyone's entitled to their opinion and their view, and I think that's important to respect. But from my point of view is that we wouldn't have put this event on without the advice and the approval of the Victorian government and the health authorities, including the national team as well, the federal team. So we are putting this event on, and with that approval, and obviously the objective and the processes we have in place to protect the community have been critical, and that's been the most important thing. Now, if we got that right, and we had the processes approved that we're going to get it right, if we get that right at the end of next week, you know, then that is the major battle, and then it is having the event and hopefully having some crowds that come. But we can get to the end of this, and a few things. One, we could signal to the rest of the world that, yes, Melbourne is the sporting capital of the world because they attempted to put on a global sporting event, you know, with over 1,000 athletes and their teams coming into one city, doing quarantine for 14 days, and then competing for $83 million over 4 weeks. If we achieve that, I think, again, there's going to be a lot of other sporting franchises and businesses looking at that and entertainment ones and say, you know, how did you guys do it, and can we do it a similar way, and what do you need to put in place to do it? So that's really what we're looking to achieve, but also to provide the players with an opportunity to make a really good living and to support their careers. And, you know, $83 million of prize money and being able to have an event is very significant in this current pandemic. We didn't know that we were going to run it. We'd be running the event that we would be at the height of the pandemic globally, which we really are. It continues to climb as well. But from our perspective, you know, everything we're doing as best as we can on the processes, and in order to protect the health and the well-being of the community, and now to get the players up and ready to go.
Craig, thanks for your time, and all the best until we speak again.
Perfect. Thank you. Thanks, John.
Australian Open Tournament Director Craig Tiley joining us on the AO Show. With such an unusual lead-in to the Australian Open, speculation over the title contenders is wide open. Hotel quarantine makes preparing for a Grand Slam all the more challenging, according to former top 40 pro Nicole Pratt. But she's told the AO show the prospect of getting back on court should be a powerful incentive.
I think the players are going to be overwhelmingly excited to be able to kind of start the year playing. We saw in 2020 so much of the year they weren't able to play. So I would say definitely on the women's side, because the women didn't have as many tournaments as the men towards the back end of the year. I'd say they're all jumping out of their skin and, yep, they're being dealt some tough cards in regards to what they normally do. But at the same time, I think they're going to be super appreciative of the opportunity that Tennis Australia is providing.
Arina Sabalenka is the in-form player heading into the first slam of the year. The Belarusian is on a 15-match winning streak, recently adding a third consecutive title in Abu Dhabi in a draw that included AO defending champion Sofia Kenin and runner-up Garbiñe Muguruza.
Well, she's going to give herself the best chance, in my opinion. Like, when I call it kind of a wave, and you have this wave of confidence when you keep winning and it becomes normal to win. And so I would say someone like Sabalenka in the past had some doubts, self-belief, lacking that self-belief. So, you know, she's giving herself every chance to be able to go further in a Grand Slam, further than the fourth round, for sure. But, you know, it all starts for me at a Grand Slam in the first round. You need to get past your first round and then go on from there, match after match.
Other contenders looking for their first taste of Grand Slam success include Karolina Pliskova and Elena Svitolina. But there are a handful of former major champions looking to add Melbourne to their swag, including Muguruza and Simona Halep. Pratt believes the twin lead-in events could have a significant impact on players' momentum heading into the AO.
The person that comes to my mind is like Serena, as in once kind of she gets into this rhythm of winning matches, then it's scary. Whereas sometimes I feel like in a Grand Slam, like the toughest matches for her sometimes are the first, second rounds. And so she will have played this lead-up tournament. If she's to get a lot of matches there, that's kind of different for her. It'll be interesting to see how everyone copes with the different scenarios.
Qualifying for the WTA 500 events gets underway at Melbourne Park on January 31. Novak Djokovic has returned to Australia as the favourite for the men's championship, bidding for a record 9th Australian Open crown. Speaking from his hotel, commentator Nick McCarville believes the Serbs' command of Melbourne Park is tantamount to Rafael Nadal's 15-year domination of Roland Garros.
You still have to say that Djokovic is the favourite just because of his record. And I'm recalling last year, in 2020, actually getting to watch the men's final as a fan. And, you know, the crowd was really cheering on Dominic Thiem, and it felt like the momentum was on Thiem's side. And Djokovic just finds that extra, the Joko gear, whatever gear that is, the other players don't possess it. And it's hard to argue that really from a cerebral perspective. Maybe you could use your heart to argue for your favorite player, but Djokovic does feel like the favorite for sure.
But McCarville believes Russia's top player, Daniil Medvedev, is capable of upstaging Djokovic and becoming just the second man born in the 90s to win a major title. The 24-year-old finished his 2020 season with wins in Paris and the ATP Finals, taking down the top three players in the world along the way.
He beats Rafa, he beats Nole, he beats Dominic Thiem. Medvedev, I think, had a little bit of a fit and start a couple years ago when he had a great summer and then didn't sputter, but obviously made the US Open final, loss to Rafa. I think he's really earned his stripes. I think that he has now matured a lot. Gilles Savara has been so effective for him on court. He's such a wacky player to watch. It's cerebral, it's fun, it's funky, it's frustrating for his opponent. And that's why I'm backing him to win the title. But gosh, if that was our final, and Medvedev's going to be a top four seed, if that's our final, pass me a couple buckets of popcorn because I'm in for it.
Meantime, young guns Hubert Hurkacz and local hope Alex de Minaur already have title wins this year in Delray Beach and Antalya, respectively. And while many Aussies are hoping for their first home champion since the 1970s, there's no begrudging McCarville's dream headline.
I'd love the headline to be a healthy, successful Australian Open. I'm more than anything else, I love this sport and I love working in it and getting a chance to talk about it and geek out about it. And I think to see the work that TA, the Victorian government, the Australian government, that everyone's put in, and the players too, you know, for them to leave home and to quarantine for 2 weeks and all of that, it'd just be great to see that come through. And I hope that tennis fans, sporting fans, you know, Australian fans around the country and people around the world get the chance to experience it. And hopefully it's a little bit of that happy slam feel that we've felt in years past.
The men begin their events with a 12-team ATP Cup on February 1 and two ATP 250 events beginning February 2. That's all for this week's episode. Join me again next week as we hear from some of the players preparing for the Australian Summer of Tennis. In the meantime, don't forget to subscribe. And if you like what you hear, please rate and review so more fans can enjoy the AO Show.